I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded. I'm gonna stop saying quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. It's not quiet anywhere I live. But anyway, we in Baltimore. Anyway, this episode, I want to talk about Netflix's Biggie, I Got a Story to Tell, which for me is something like the origin story of Biggie Smalls, which is pretty fascinating. But first, I want to share a life update. So hubby and I moved. We didn't do what we had planned to do in the fall, but nevertheless, we moved. And actually, we're downtown in a lovely apartment loft setup in one of those fancy buildings downtown. Never thought in a million years that we could ever afford to live down here, because you know how it is. Like, when you live downtown, it tends to be super expensive and not in your price range. But hubby and I sat down and did the math, and turns out we do okay, and so we could afford to stay downtown in one of those places. But yeah, so we're here. You know, the building is really nice, and our neighbors are nice too, and you know, we'll be here for a couple of years while we stack our chips and plan to, we'll reevaluate what we're gonna do, but it's probably going to be that we're going to stack our chips and find a very particular place that I was looking for in the fall. We'll just stack our chips and see what God has in store for us in a couple of years, because I at this point, you know, when you're really honest with yourself, you come to know what you really want. And the reality of it is, hubby and I are not the fixer-upper type. That's not us. We don't do a lot of DIY. Like, we will do some DIY projects, but like not any major ones. That's not us. It's just not. We know who the type of people that we are. And I know for the last couple of years, we've been trying to shoehorn ourselves into being something that we weren't. And so, you know, we had a heart to heart, and you know, we're gonna do this cute little downtown living thing for a while. We are six blocks from the stadium, which Oriole Park. For those of you who are not in and around Baltimore, we are very near the oldest market in Baltimore, and I believe it's one of the oldest markets in the country. And when I'm saying market, I'm not talking about supermarket. I'm talking about like the open air market, where you have stalls in like a warehouse sort of scenario, or like a building, but it's a bunch of stalls where you buy different things. Anyway, our building is right here next to that. And then it turns out that there are several buildings that are just like ours that are right here downtown. And rents are all over the place, right? But like, we were blessed to find a cute spot that was in our price range. And again, once I renewed my mind on what I thought was possible, turns out more was possible than I thought. And quite frankly, my daddy, in the most loving way possible, told me I was cheap. My daddy cold-blooded. Anyway, my mama didn't say that, but of course my daddy did. Anyway, mama never does. She's mommy shady too. You know what? Oh, it's fine. You know, I love my parents, but they're shady sometimes. Anyway, so you know, we're doing this whole thing, and I'm getting accustomed to being downtown and kind of figuring out my way. You know, you have your whole plan of how you get from X, Y, and Z, and trying to figure everything out. And, you know, I'm still a country gal at the end of the day. I'm a country gal. And this whole city living thing is still new to me, even though I've been here for 12 years. I lived up in a quieter neighborhood. And it was relatively easy to get back and forth. Well, now I'm downtown, it's a little louder and busier. And, you know, so I'm adjusting. And in my naivete, I really thought that, yeah, okay, it'll be a lot of traffic, but that's about it. You know what I mean? A lot of traffic and, you know, we're high up enough that we won't really hear, you know, all the music and stuff and all the people and the, you know, the street happenings. We won't hear that. Like sometimes I am just so naive because not only do we hear all of the street traffic because of the acoustics of the tall buildings, but we are near the light rail. And I will say this, at any point within the next couple of minutes, you're going to hear the light rail. I pray that you don't hear the light rail beeping his horn and hollering at somebody that's trying to stop them from their mission to go to the next stop. But we have replaced the honks of cars with the honks of the light rail. And we have replaced, oh, you know what? I would say we replaced the loud music, but no. The other day somebody was singing Sade, but they like had a megaphone and like a speaker set up, because there's also a subway stop not far from my building. And because of the acoustics, like I just hear everything. And because I'm working from home, of course I hear everything right now. So anyway, also here's the kicker. Here's the just girl, please sop up that water behind the back of your ears scenario in this whole thing. I thought because we were downtown, we would not hear the motorbikes, you know, the clubs, the 12 o'clock boys and all of them. Not 12 o'clock. Is it the 12 o'clock boys? Can't call it. Anyway, all the motorcycle, not the motorcycle, excuse me. It's not motorcycle. These are dirt bikes. All the dirt bike clubs, I thought that they stayed up near Druid Hill and where we were staying up by Morgan. You know, driving around anywhere, Patterson, anywhere that there are big old parks, you know, that's where I thought that they would hang out. I wasn't using that noggin of mine. Didn't occur to me that they would, because we're downtown, we're on major thoroughfares, didn't realize that, yeah, just because you're downtown doesn't mean anything. And in fact, the dirt bikes just love riding down Franklin, love riding across on 40, Orleans, just the Howard, Utah, all of them, all of the place. Google Baltimore and you're getting a sense of where Google Baltimore, downtown Baltimore, and you know where I live. Like, you don't know where I live, but downtown is where I live. Anyway, so they are loud and they're a lot. And again, my silly self, I thought, oh, they, you know, they're just up around the parks because, you know, it's busy. Weirdo. I'm so weird sometimes and so naive. Anyway, but I'll get over it. It's totally fine. It's just, I just don't know what I was thinking. But anyway, I am going to enjoy when we're able, when everybody's vaccinated, or at least my core is vaccinated, we still walking around with masks, that we can go to the stadium because Governor Hogan, who, man, he's trash and he gonna run for president and I don't care. Anyway, he opened up the stadium to 50% capacity. And so, you know, it's baseball season soon. So, you know, I'm an old fan, I'm fickle, but nevertheless, I'm an old fan. And dragging the hubby down, dragging some friends down. Because we're literally blocks away, which is cool. But like, let's be clear. There's some major renovation happening here. And our building is already not accessible to most people. It's going to get even more like that. Because like I said, there's major renovation happening at this old market that we're near. And then what's going to happen when this renovation finishes? is that the rents, probably in the market for the stalls, but definitely the rents for the mom and pop little corner stores that are in and around the area are going to go up too. Let me tell you why. Because there's already a little vegan spot on the corner of, what's that, Utah and Franklin, which you would never see before. I would not have expected to see it here, simply because it's not an area where you would see that sort of thing. But actually, now that I'm down here, it makes a lot of sense because there's a whole lot of loft and apartment and loft setups around here. I already said that, but there's a whole lot of loft and there's a whole lot of those around here. And the rents are all over the place, right? We were looking at one. It's like $4,000 to $5,000 a month. And I'm like, what? But okay. Anyway, which if you're in New York, or if you're in LA, you know what I mean? That's nothing for you, but that's a lot. I think that's a lot anywhere. Anyway, and I'm quite sure that, well, I know that the closer, like we're downtown, which is a hop, skip, and a jump for the harbor because we're blocks away from Oriole Park, which is right at the harbor, right? But there are apartments, condos that are on the water that you know the rent, the mortgage, what have you, is dumb expensive because of their location, right? But you get that. What I wasn't expecting was what's about to happen here, which I fully expect. Of course, the rents are going to go, like the hubby and I aren't going to be able to afford this for, like once they finish that market, I fully expect that our rents are going to be, it's going to double for sure. For sure, it's going to double. When they finish that, because of the gentrification, y'all know that that's the way it goes. So we'll enjoy this for now. And in that time, we're already planning in that time, that, you know, we'll be exactly where we want to be in terms of purchasing the house that we want. Or, you know, maybe if we bad enough, we'll probably just build one. But I want to live in a certain place and there's not a whole lot of space to build where I want to live. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But like, we're not naive. We know that it's not long now before we won't be able to afford to be here. But we chilling for now. Anyway, but what I really wanted to, I just wanted to share that little life update because it feels like there's a weight lifted from my shoulders. And certainly I could see the energy come back in hubby's face. And it's just, I shared it only to, just as a reminder for anyone who's listening to this, at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you. Regardless of if you're doing something or staying in a situation because you want to help somebody else, there's a certain point where you really have to stare your face. You have to look your own self in the mirror and get an understanding of, but at what cost? What am I sacrificing to make sure that they're good? And is that a sacrifice that I should be making right now? And that's legit. Like, and the thing about it is, we make sacrifices for the people we love and our family members and our close friends all the time. Big ones and small ones, right? But there's a point where you really need to take a step back and understand the cost. Because the cost is, if the cost is your health and safety or your well-being, then that's too great a cost. It's too great. If you are inconvenienced, you only you could understand what is too great a cost. But you have to be honest with yourself when you come to that conclusion. Like, you literally have to be honest. You can't fool around with that. And what I will say is that hubby and I, we weren't being honest with ourselves in the situation that we were in. And it can get difficult, very difficult, especially when you're dealing in situations where you care for the people that you are supporting. You're caring for the people that you are working with. And I've, you know, when you are engaged in business with people that you care for, things can get messy, things can get muddy. So it's good to have a good plan going into it so that things don't get weird and emotions don't trump good common sense. And so hubby and I learned a very valuable lesson in that. And, you know, we hope to apply that in the future because certainly, again, all on his face, it's just the pressure is lifted. He's lighter. He genuinely looks lighter. And I know I'm sleeping better knowing that we walked away from that situation and we did what was best for us. And so my whole advice, the only reason why I'm telling any of this, because you don't care where I live, it doesn't matter. You don't care what's up. But pay attention to the situation that you find yourself in. Pay attention to the sacrifices that you're making and weigh them. Check in with yourself and weigh them just to make sure you're doing the right thing. And be honest with yourself. And if you're not, walk away. Walk away. Anyway, but I'm done with that. I'm off that. And moving on, because, you know, there have been some really good films coming out these days. There have also been some interesting docs coming out, too. I saw the other day, which I'm so looking forward to it. Tina, HBO is going to release a doc on Tina Turner. And I cannot wait. And I know y'all hear the light rail going by. Like I said, it's just a common occurrence. And I hope that they don't honk at any point during this recording. But anyway, Tina Turner's life is so doggone fascinating to me because for so many different reasons. And in fact, if I pull back just a little bit, if I'm honest, I've always shared that I enjoy learning. I enjoy documentaries. I enjoy learning about, you know, what drove a person to do what they were doing, what drives, you know, what inspiration they got from XYZ scenario situation. And Tina, to me, represents someone. Boy, did she ever go through a whole lot. But then did she not reinvent herself or refashion her life and continue to do so? And I just enjoy her because that story, painful as it is in parts, is also extremely inspiring. And I just enjoy seeing people not recreate themselves, but like turn a new chapter, go into a different place in their life where they're doing something totally new. Because at the end of the day, we are spiritual beings who aren't meant to just be one thing all the time. We are meant to explore different aspects of our lives, of our beings. We are meant to explore new corners of our worlds. And I just love seeing when I have a chance to learn about someone who has done that and is doing that, I just enjoy it. Because again, I've shared this before, my parents, I feel like my parents are the greatest example for me of people who embrace change, embrace learning new things, doing new things, having whole new, like making total pivots. Even though I'm a creature of habit, boy, do I ever enjoy just doing something new. And I get that from my parents. And one of the things that attracted me to hubby is that I saw that same spirit in him doing new things, like unafraid, less afraid than me, to just do a new thing. Let go of what was and embrace what is. I just enjoy that because I feel like in my core, that's what we're meant to do. And I just sounded real hippy dippy. Whatever, I don't care. It is what it is. Anyway, but anyway, so I am eager to hear about Miss Tina, Tina Turner. And then also, like, so I'm waiting for that, and that drew me. And then I don't know if it's me, if I just wasn't paying attention or what. But the Tina, so let me just tell you. So the Tina Turner thing, I haven't seen, the first time I saw that was a couple of days ago, the teaser. First time I saw that was a couple of days ago. It's being released at the end of the month. The Biggie doc, which I'm about to talk about, I literally saw the trailer for that like a couple of days before it dropped. And I don't know, is it me? Am I missing it? Because I certainly didn't see the notification on my social about either one of those. And I'm confused. And again, it could be just me focusing on other things and just missing it. But, Netflix told me, Big I Got a Story to Tell is dropping in a couple of days. You should watch it. And so I was like, okay, cool. So the reason why I was drawn to it, and when I, in the next segment, I'll kind of tell you my background with my relationship with Biggie's music and Biggie the artist, which I didn't have a personal relationship, let's be clear. But my relationship to Biggie the artist and the music, which was interesting, which, I mean, if you, given where I'm from in the United States, it should make sense. But anyway, I'll go into that. But, you know, I have come, because I'm living in Baltimore, I've become more fascinated with Biggie and Tupac. And to me, and when I talk about it, it'll probably annoy the heck out of you because I'm talking about the origin story of Biggie's origin story. But I keep bringing up Tupac because I can't help it. Because in my mind, how I grew up, they were inextricably connected. Even though there's some nuance to that I'll share later, but they were inextricably connected. And I think they're even more so now because of their fates, because of the circumstance of their demise, because of the impact on the culture, because of that, the impact of their loss on my own personal life. And then in the fullness of time and being an adult, just looking back on those situations with an adult mind and just having very strong thoughts, which I will share later, about a lot of different things, but their origin stories. I'm always interested in origin stories. Everybody is. Everybody wants to know how things began. That's why everybody enjoyed Behind the Music, VH1's Behind the Music series. Why everybody enjoys... What's TV One? Shoot, what's the one on TV One? Were you not Where Are They Now? But that was like an MTV thing. What's TV One got? Not Behind the Music. Oh shoot, I forgot what it's called. But you know, black folks know what I'm talking about. Or people who are interested in R&B and who what? No, it's black folks. Y'all know what I'm talking about. It's not Behind the Music, but it's like BET or TV One's version of Behind the Music. You know what I'm talking about. Where they feature all of these black artists that we love and we know and love and just want to learn more about. Daggone it. I can't call it, but you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, but there's a reason why those are so important, because everybody loves the backstory. Everybody loves hearing the origin story. And so I'm no different. And so, of course, there's a market for a Biggie I Got a Story to Tell. The thing about it is, does it actually give a good origin story? Because the thing about it is, you know how documentaries go, depending on who has their hand in telling it. Specifically, if it's the person telling it, you're only going to get their perspective, right? You're going to get a strong, you're only going to get what they sign off on. Unless it's totally independent of that person or anybody in their camp, you're going to get what they sign off on. And so, you know, you kind of go in with that knowledge. And certainly I went into the Biggie doc with that knowledge. And I, like I said about Tina's doc, I'm going in with that too, because she's in it. She's in it. You take it with a grain of salt, but nevertheless, you're still getting more information than maybe you knew before. So anyway, but what I will say before I even begin, the whole 96, 97 was an interesting phase. Like, we had just come off of the Great Flood, dealing with all the aftermath of the Great Flood of 94? And did it flood again in 95? Can't call it. But Google that. We were totally isolated for a while. It was scary. People were dying. And you just kind of had to escape, especially if you're a preteen or a teen. You're just trying to find a good escape, right? And so you come out of that and you're like, okay, well, that was my first brush with things going topsy-turvy and not, you know, things kind of going haywire, but, you know, you move on. And then you start moving into the realm where, from my perspective, I'm latching on to this aspect of Black culture that I'm clinging on to because that I feel like I don't have it in my real life because I'm living in this predominantly white community. And so, you know, I'm latching on to this and I'm consuming as much television as possible, specifically pop culture TV as possible, to kind of make sure that I'm connected. And these things begin to happen. And specifically the issues, the East Coast, West Coast thing kind of unfolds. And it was wild. Very, very wild. So in the next segment, I'll go all into the best I can talking about that time period and what it meant for me. And then I will talk about in the best way possible, but I won't bore you to tears, but I'll definitely talk about what I felt about what I learned in the Big Air. I got a story to tell, but then also I'll just peel back and kind of just really go hard about, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts about that time frame because I lived it. No, excuse me. Let's be clear. I didn't live on the East Coast or the West Coast. I lived in the Midwest, but I was watching and consuming a lot of the media that was being talked about, or a lot of the programming that talked about what was going on, and read a lot of articles, interviews with them and all of that stuff. And then I know where I was when both of them met their ends, or at least when I learned about both of them meeting their ends, and it hit me differently. Each one hit me differently. So I'll talk about that in the next segment, but I won't lose focus, but just ride this wave, because I'm gonna talk kind of in a roundabout way, because this whole documentary brought up a lot of feelings that it's been a minute that I talked about, that I've thought about before. So in the next segment, it's all about a lot of stuff, but mostly about Biggie, I Got a Story to Tell. Growing up, specifically growing up in the Midwest, I first became attracted to rap music listening to, honestly, what my brother was listening to. One of my youngest brother was listening to at the time. So it was Outkast. It was the Ghetto Boys. It was Slick Rick, of course, Children's Story. It was The Roots, believe it or not. And I say that only because a lot of the artists that my brother was listening to, and certainly what I heard on the radio, were Midwest, South, or West Coast artists. So, of course, we were listening to Snoop. Of course, we were listening to Tupac, Dr. Dre, all of the folks on the West Coast. And then Southern artists, right? So Scarface, Mobb Deep. No, was it Mobb Deep? Who was it that was with, who were those folks? What's that guy's name that was in oh, shucks. Ghetto Mob? No. I cannot call the name, but he was a singer. He's a singer with a very specific voice. Not West Coast, not Nate Dogg, but Southern singer whose name I cannot remember, but he's brown, he's bald headed, he wears glasses. He was in Gnarls Barkley. He was the singer in Gnarls Barkley. Can't call his name, but he got caught up because he was a creep in doing some weird stuff and being misogynistic and probably being just a nasty old man. I mean, it's kind of par for the course for a lot of these folks. They feel entitled to just treat people like things. Anyway, this particular artist, you know who I'm talking about? CeeLo, the one that got caught up. What was it? Goody Mob. I listened to the Goody Mob like nobody's business. Anyway, I grew up listening to what my youngest, the brother that's the youngest brother in the family, but closest to me, older than me. I remember listening to what he listened to. And I was listening to Jimi Hendrix. I think I was beginning to have, even before I got linked up with band and concert band and jazz band and all of that stuff, I began to have like an expanded musical palette because my brother listened to a lot of rap. My mama listened to a whole lot of R&B, my daddy and jazz. My daddy listened to a whole lot of blues. And so I was kind of rounding out my musical palette, and somehow or another Jimi Hendrix fell in there. And I think it has something to do with, you remember that CD service? What was that CD service? If you are an older millennial like myself, and you were from the, I don't know if it was like an international thing, but maybe they did this in the UK too, where you could order so many CDs for free and then change your address and get it again. We was trifling for doing it, but you could do it. And there weren't many checks and balances. So you could just keep getting these CDs for like a dollar. I can't call the name of the club. But anyway, whatever this club is, that's what I was a part of. And so I think I just at random got a bunch of different artists and their CDs. And Jimi Hendrix was one of them. I listened to All Around the Watchtower like incessantly. And there were other artists that I was introduced to, but I just remember listening to The Roots, Distort to Static, that album. And the album that had Jimi Hendrix All Around the Watchtower on it, that album. And then, like I said, a bunch of Ghetto Boys. Tech N9ne, if you know who he is, he Kansas City rapper. I listened to him a lot. Fun fact, I knew a girl who she was adopted by white parents. I'm pretty sure she was, she had at least one parent that was, a light-skinned black person or biracial themselves. And so I think she was in a rebellious state. And so she went, we lived in a small town. And anyway, so I think she went through this rebellious state where she was like trying to suss out her, we were all, anybody that, the, anyway, she was trying to figure her own self out. And I think in doing that, she was kind of drawn to like the music industry. And she knew Tech N9ne, and she knew like a lot of his people. I don't want to say that she was, I don't know what she was doing, but I just knew that there was no reason for her to know them except that she just knew them. Because it's not like we ran in the same circles as Tech N9ne. So I remember she was the one that kept getting me all these CDs and just letting me know what was going on with Tech N9ne, because she knew she didn't necessarily know Tech N9ne. I'm pretty sure she was messing with one of his people, one of his entourage. Anyway, so if you don't know who Tech N9ne is, Google him, because he remind me, his rap flow is the reason why I gave Twista a chance. If you don't know who Twista is, Google him. He's a Chicago rapper. Anyway, so that was my musical taste. And of course, Tupac was in there because I felt connected to Tupac because he sounded really smart and I was kind of just drawn to him. Plus, he was pretty. you know, he was into music and I enjoyed that. I think looking back on him now, I'm just like, oh my gosh. Well, and again, I'll get to that thing that I think about him. I think that thing that I think about him didn't occur to me until much later on, like within the last 5 years. But at the time I was like, oh man, like he's got the finger, when I was a child, he's got his finger on the pulse, you know, cause I'm, when he's coming out, I'm like 10 or 11, 12 or 13. I'm early teen or middle teen. I can't call which, but when he died, I was definitely a middle teen for sure. I was a middle teen and I was devastated and I was so confused. And then, you know, when Biggie was murdered a little while later, it was kind of, at this point, I'm numb to it. And it felt to me, and this is wrong, but I know I'm not the only one, it felt to me like the circle was complete, which is a crappy sentiment to have, but that's certainly what I felt. And it wasn't a, to me, it wasn't a, oh, Biggie deserved it. It was a, this was inevitable sort of thing. And I don't know if that was, if that sentiment was encouraged by news media and my friends and family and, you know, some of the things that both camps were talking about. I don't know where I got that concept from, but I distinctly remember after following Tupac's death, there was this waiting period where I was expecting something to happen to Biggie. And I wasn't in gang culture. I didn't have any family members that were in gang culture that I knew of. So I really didn't, that wasn't on my radar. But retribution, I understood retribution. I understood people wanting their get back. And so I was like, it's kind of, in my teenage mind, I'm like, well, it's kind of inevitable. Now, in my adult mind, I'm thinking, there's so many things that were avoidable here, and yet here we are. But I'm not going to spend time talking about the demise of Biggie or Tupac. Except the only reason why I bring it up is to say that in this whole East, I grew up when in the United States, in the music industry, it was an East Coast, West Coast kind of feel. And where I was and what my people were listening to were West Coast. We fell on the West Coast spectrum of things. And even though Kansas City Radio played Biggie, they played Tupac more. They played Midwest and Southern artists and West Coast artists more than they played They played West Coast, Southern, and Midwest artists more than they played East Coast artists. It just was what it was. And if I wanted to get like East Coast, more of East Coast rappers beyond like the mainstream, what you saw on TV, like MTV, I needed to like search that out for myself, which is why it's surprising to me that The Roots made it into my brother's catalog, because they're East Coast, but they just didn't feel like, I guess replace East Coast with New York, New Jersey rappers, because The Roots were all over it. Like The Roots were there. We're listening to Freeway? No, not really. We were not listening to Freeway either. We weren't listening to Freeway. I don't even think it was out when I was young, when I was a teen, like an early teen. I don't think Freeway was out in a way that I would have heard him. Anyway, but we listened to The Roots. We didn't really hear. Well, we did too hear The Roots. We did too hear The Roots on radio. So they played The Roots. And like I said, Kansas City Radio, KPRS. I know it's still, well, I pray it's still around, but KPRS will always play the genres that I mentioned, and Biggie, but like Tupac more. And so when Tupac passed, it was like, whoa. I had a friend who was very dear to me when we were growing up, and we've grown apart, because it was one of those friends that, like, she was super sweet and we had very similar personalities, but at the end of the day, it was one of those friends because we live near each other sort of thing. We go to school together. We have similar classes sort of things. And so she was devastated when we learned about Tupac. I can remember when we found out about Tupac's passing, I had gone to her house. I remember her father, hey, light rail. Hey, girl. Anyway, I can remember going over to her house and going to her room. And it was like after track practice or something like that. I can't call it. But we were at her house. We were just chilling. And I think we found out because we turned on KPRS. And one of the DJs came calling the, I don't even remember half of the DJs that were on KPRS at that time, but was that 97? Was that 90? Yeah, it was 97. So we weren't driving. This was like eighth grade, ninth grade. We weren't driving. I'm silly. I'm thinking we drove over. Somebody dropped us off. Let's be real. I think it was her dad. Her dad dropped her off, dropped us off. And we were in her room and we turned on KPRS and announced that Tupac had died. Girl, she immediately started to bawl. This is why, girl, so her face turned beet red. Beet red. She immediately started to bawl, turned around. There was a Tupac picture hanging above her bed. She pulled it off. She ripped it off her bed, off her wall. And then she fell on her bed. She was distraught. I was frustrated. I was saddened. I wasn't distraught. I was more so, girl, pull her together. But at the same time, I was just like, dag, somebody finally got him. Because remember, up at that point, he was, you know, moving around a little reckless. And I think that was the sentiment. Like, everybody kind of knew, like, we love Tupac, but he's reckless. He moves a little reckless in the streets. And again, in my teenage mind, I'm thinking, well, he got caught up. Again, avoidable. In my adult mind, I'm thinking, some of this is just some avoidable stuff, but your path is your path. And so, you know, we lost Tupac. And then fast forward, when I learned of Biggie's passing, I couldn't even tell you what I was doing. I'm sure I heard it on KPRS, or maybe I was watching MTV at the time and Kurt Loder came on. And was it Kurt Loder? Kurt Loder. I'm pretty sure his name was Kurt Loder. Anyway, Kurt came on and said, you know, Biggie lost his life too. And I want to Tupac Shakur. I just want to. Tupac lost his life in September 96, and Biggie lost his life. Biggie. Not Boogie. Biggie Smalls. Biggie Smalls lost his life in March 97. So that's not even. 6-7 months, something like that. Biggie lost his life. And what I'm going back to it is October, November, December, January, March. So yeah. I had to count. I just wanted to be accurate. Anyway, I don't remember where I was, but like I said, I'm sure I was watching like MTV and got the update from Kurt Loder, or I was listening to KPRS. And one of the DJs came on and shared it. And I don't remember feeling bad about it. I just remember feeling, well, the circle is closed. Which is a terrible way to respond to someone's murder. Terrible, right? But that's where I was. I was kind of desensitized to it. And I was over this whole East Coast, West Coast thing because what preceded Tupac's death, you gotta know, people were getting shot behind music and behind their affiliation with East Coast rappers or West Coast rappers. And remember that infamous Source award show where they were in New York
and Snoop Dogg, and what's his name? Snoop Dogg. It was Snoop. It was, what's that guy's name? Suge and all of those people. Remember when they won and then Suge came on and disrespected Puffy, which was Biggie's guy. And they were in New York and they were, of course, disrespecting New York rappers. And it was just a whole thing. And then you remember, well, if you're too young to remember, or you just weren't in the loop like that, all you have to do is Google Source Awards 96 Source Awards or something like that. And if you Google that, a video will come up and you'll see that the year Outkast won was also that award show where they won. That was when the East Coast, West Coast thing kind of blew up. And it's just, again, as an adult, I'm looking back and I'm just like, all of this could have been avoided, because much of this was ratcheted up by people who had a vested interest in seeing that both of these artists kept making money and kept making albums so that they could make more money. Not the artists themselves, but the people that were backing them could make more money. Like, this is the puppetry, their strings moving all of this and not facing any consequences. We still don't know. Really, who took the lives of these two artists in their 20s? Nevertheless, so I moved to Baltimore, and it's only then meeting my husband, meeting my homegirl mom, talking with other folks who were born and bred right here in Baltimore, that I recognize the same allegiance that we had to Tupac. For the most part, they had that same allegiance to Biggie. And Biggie meant something totally different to them than he did to me. And it's only been in the last decade that I've gotten more familiar with Biggie's music. I've also gotten more familiar with Biggie's childish ways and manipulative and misogynistic ways. But nevertheless, I've grown to know him more simply because he was a beloved figure, even here in Baltimore. And so, I like to learn things. So I've spent a lot of time, when something would come up, I would consume the media about him just to learn more about him, because, you know, in the same way that I did for Tupac. And of course, I was drawn to this documentary because it promised to be a good telling of the origin story of Biggie. And I'm sure if you've read any of the reviews at this point, you'll kind of get, or if you've watched it yourself, you kind of get the sense that it didn't really live up to its own hype. But it did show you some things that you might not have known. I will say this. It does not surprise me, but it was interesting to learn a couple of things. Number one, it does not surprise me that Biggie, even though he was a rapper, was more into the melody and how this rap sonically sounded. Because Biggie rapped like he could play the drums. From my opinion, Biggie rapped like he could play an instrument. What do I mean by that? The documentary kind of talks about it, but just saying it further, I play instruments. I'm a singer. There is a certain time that just is kind of beat into you, for lack of a better term, when you are studying music to play it professionally or studying it to just be good at it and play for your church or whatever, or your religious organization or for whatever group you're in. There's a certain innate timing that you kind of build, you develop. And there's a certain way that you learn to, as they say, ride the beat in like rap, or just like flow with it. Like there's a certain way that you just, and you learn to just kind of flow with things, to be on time. Like, you know, when to come in just ahead of the beat so that it can, your note can hit on point, or you know how long to hold a note so that when, you know, depending on where you end it, it ends appropriately. Like there's a lot of things that it's hard to teach, but like when you're in it, you learn it. Like when you spend some time spend some time in music, you just learn them. And when I got to listening to Biggie, and I'm probably not explaining that super well, like go find a musician friend and they'll tell you more. But you can always tell when somebody is intimately connected to music, or at the very least, they've spent a lot of time with different music, because of the way that they treat the beat, because of the way that they treat notes. In many cases, if you're listening to Biggie, the way he raps and even his tone, it sounds like you could probably sing it and still get the same effect. Do you know what I mean? And it's clear. Listen to a lot of his music. The Hey Love, Hey Love. That song. There's a song that he had. It's called Hey Love, Hey Love. Don't cry no more. You've been robbed. That one that I never knew about. My hubby linked me with that only because I was listening to the original version and he thought it was the Biggie version. We do that a lot where I'm listening to some old school, like 70s songs. It's mostly 70s songs. A lot of 90s rappers borrowed, specifically Biggie, borrowed from 70s R&B. And it never occurred to me until this documentary, but again, it doesn't surprise me, that Biggie spent a lot of time listening and crafting his art around that music. And so, of course, his rap would in many ways imitate or borrow from a lot of those songs. And he wasn't the best singer, but like you could get, you listen to him, you get his vision. Knowing that he studied jazz, knowing that he listened to jazz, and there was a he had a jazz musician friend that he mentored under for a while. It makes sense the way that he approached certain raps, a way that he approached rap. It made sense why that sounded so good to your ear, because he played it in such a way that it sounded like, you know, a good old R&B song, only it was a rap song. Anyway, so that didn't surprise me, but it was refreshing to hear, and it made a lot of sense. I think the other thing that I learned from this documentary, before I get to the big thing that I learned, was I didn't understand how much he was trying to build an empire and raise everyone around him up. Misguided as it kind of was, like there's a moment where in the documentary we learn that Junior Mafia didn't know that their name was Junior Mafia until Biggie introduced them on stage as Junior Mafia. So like, if you're going to build something with other people, you should probably let them know what you're doing, and you should probably get buy-in from them. But, you know, when you're ambitious and you don't have a lot of direction, you haven't been kind of shown how to grow. You kind of just move, however, and you learn as you go. But yeah, that he was working to grow an empire. I didn't know that. I guess I just thought that Junior Mafia was already formed, and that he was just lending credibility to them. I didn't realize that was his brainchild. What else didn't I know? What else did I learn? I'm sure there are other things that I learned, although there was a lot that I already knew. But the one thing that solidified for me here, that like really clicked for me in this documentary, is the same thing that clicked about Tupac for me, which was Biggie came from, his mother was a single mother, but she was very ambitious. He was well protected and is a good student. He chose to be in the streets. Like Tupac chose to be in the streets as well. And I sound like an auntie. I know I sound like an auntie, but that frustrates me to no end, because it's not as if he didn't have food on the table and he had to go hustle. He chose to go hustle. Like, he made a conscious decision. He was smart enough to make a conscious decision that this is what I'm going to do. There are these two paths, and there's one path where I can continue to be a good student and be in after school programming and keep hanging out with my jazz musician mentor and be a jazz musician, or do something, you know, walk along the straight and narrow, or I could be out on these corners selling whatever and get a lot of money real quick. I'm choosing to get a lot of money real quick. Not I live in a neighborhood where I'm being forced, or I'm living around people who are forcing me to do this. I made the conscious decision to do this. And you could make the argument that because he made that conscious decision when he was a teen, that set his path on the trajectory that ended in his death. Now, I know that that's a little extreme, but it's so frustrating to me, because Tupac did a very similar thing. Tupac was an art student. He went to the Baltimore School of Art here. He was in an art school in Baltimore, one of the most prestigious art schools in the country, as a high school student. He got accepted, did the darn thing, very talented. Everybody knows how talented Tupac was. He made a conscious decision to be a wild boy. And it's like, and maybe it's just a hard thing for me to understand just because of my upbringing and probably a number of different factors, but neither one of them, their life was totally great. You know, we know Tupac's background, especially with the struggles that he had with his mother and their moving and things like that. And of course, not everything was sweet with Biggie growing up, but both of them made a conscious decision. Biggie made a conscious decision. I'm just going to sell drugs. And I need to get over it, because ultimately, like, and actually I'm kind of renewing my mind on even that thing that I just said a minute ago about, well, you set your own path and what you did when you were 14 set the trajectory for what happened to you when you were, what, 27, 26, however old he was. But for that, he's on this path. Because what happened? Like, the roundabout way is, everybody knows this, but he was selling drugs, and at the same time, he still needed an outlet for his creativity, so he turned to rap, and he goes in these rap battles and blah blah blue, right? And he and Puffy meet each other, and Puffy is with Andre Harrell, and Puffy's about to put him on, then Andre Harrell puts him out because Puffy's ego, and then, you know, Puffy goes through a point where he's trying to convince Biggie to stay with him because he's about to blow up. And Biggie is still about that. He's still in the life. And this is one thing that I did learn, that Biggie, that Tupac, or not Biggie, not Biggie, not Tupac, but Sean Combs had a meeting at the crossroads moment with Biggie, like for real, because Biggie was going down to South Carolina to go sell drugs, which is not a thing that I knew about. But I mean, if you, I guess it's a like a for real thing. If you listen to his music, he talking about people going down to Maryland and sell drugs, going down to different places to sell drugs. So it makes sense that, you know, they would have moved their operation. He would have been a part of moving drugs in another place. But that they had a crossroads moment where Sean was like, you can't do this and do rap. Like, it's one or the other. I need your total attention. I need your full attention on this. And he chose rap. Which is, again, another choice he's making. And arguably a good choice, because he's then able to focus totally and hone his skills and to be able to release the art that we enjoy today. But I just cannot help but think, what am I really mad at? What am I really frustrated at? That I don't think that Biggie or Tupac were being authentically themselves. They were putting on a show. That at the end of the day, they were both very talented musicians and artists that should have had the time and energy to focus on their art and not this performance that they put on. Because I, without question, I fully believe that Tupac was a performance. The public-facing Tupac that we saw was mostly a performance. Thug Life, everybody knows Thug Life doesn't mean what thug to be a thug, a hoodlum. I forgot what the acronym stands for, but everybody knows that it didn't mean ill intent. Who does that? What hard person puts an uplifting acronym on his daggone stomach and tattoo? Come on. Come on. And even Biggie, you're building an empire. You're putting on this persona, but like it's like a double persona, because like he has a stage presence and then he has this persona among his friends. You're not hard, but you're playing it. And then when hard consequences come in your face, like there are some people who are about that. These two people were not about that life. And I keep talking about both of them because I think I look at them. And again, this is from my perspective. I know other people feel differently, but I just feel like they were playing at being hard. They were playing at being gangsters. Tupac more than most, more than Biggie in many ways, was playing harder than most. Certainly Tupac had a lot of, we say demons, but Tupac had a lot to unpack. Tupac needed time with a therapist. He needed time to unpack so that he could properly channel his energy. Biggie probably also needed time because needed time on the couch, because what we know is that he lost people very near and dear to him. There was one pitiful situation where I can't remember if it was cousin or somebody he was very close to was killed by his uncle, and his uncle was then killed by a store owner. The story goes, his friend was in the store and his uncle followed him in the store, and because of whatever transpired between them, some sort of code or whatever that was broken, the uncle guns down his nephew, and then the store clerk guns down the uncle. And so that family has lost two members in one incident. And whole families and friend groups are traumatized behind that. And to be in a documentary, like if you're going to tell it, you got to like tell it, right? And so somebody, one, I think it wasn't Lil Cece. It was somebody that knew Biggie, that grew, was like a family friend with Biggie, speaks in code saying, like, this particular person, the nephew, broke a code. And it's just something that was unforgivable. And I'm like, what is the point of you talking about it without actually talking about it? Like, if you're gonna tell it, tell it all the way. But anyway, so my frustration about this doc is coming out. We learned some new things, but then it's like we didn't learn enough of those new things. We didn't learn enough. You didn't go deeply into the new things that we were learning. And the other side of this thing is Biggie was deeply misogynistic. He was a womanizer and he was abusive. But we're not talking about this in this documentary, in this origin story. So if he comes from one single parent home, absolutely. But what's her name? Vanetta Wallace. Miss Wallace created a great life for him despite the challenge of being a single mother. What's the origin? Like, we know that his father was missing in action and that he didn't even know him, for real. But, like, what's the reason for the act? What's the reason for the behavior towards little Kim? I'm not ever forgetting how he manipulated and verbally and probably physically, allegedly or physically abused her, and then did many of the same things to Faith. But then you have Faith speaking highly of him. Like, it's her right to speak however she wants about her beloved. But, like, we not just gonna sit here and act like Biggie didn't have, like, his only flaws were that he chose to be a part of the street game for a while before choosing to be in rap. Like, we're not just gonna skirt past the fact that he did a lot of terrible things. And again, I cannot stress to you enough how deeply we haven't talked about the things that Lil' Kim endured nearly enough. Not nearly enough. We haven't explored that. I would like to explore that. And I want there to be a reckoning of some sort. Will I get it? Probably not. But, like, my goodness. So there's those two things that we just can't ignore that, obviously, in this origin story, there was no they totally ignored it. But my thing is, like, if you're going to do a, like I say, if you're going to tell a story, you better tell it. And so when you're giving an origin story, you got to give me everything. And they didn't deliver on that, which was frustrating. But the one thing that it did deliver on was just reminding me that, yeah, both of these, Biggie was a very talented person and he decided that I was going to do this tough guy thing at the cost of my art. But then even then, he still had to get it out. He still had to find ways to get it out. And so when his career took off, of course, he poured it into his music. But I'm feeling very much like an auntie. I'm feeling very much older. Because my 14-year-old, 13-year-old self would be like, it's not that serious. These are the things that just happened to these folks. But my adult self is like, you were an active participant. Tupac recklessly moving around like Fat Man and Greasy, like he can't get touched, and got touched. Biggie moving around like there wouldn't be, like he knew that there were connections to him. And of course he publicly, no, that's not what I meant to say. What I meant to say is people were pointing fingers at him. And instead of moving cautiously and making good decisions for the sake of his daughter, or daughters, I don't know how many kids he actually had. Probably daughter for sure. They only acknowledged the daughter in this documentary. So I have not looked to see if he had other children. But instead of doing what's best for the sake of your legacy, you choose to go to a place where you know that you will likely get touched, and then you get touched. Hindsight is 2020, so it's easy for me as an adult to look back on this and say, why did you do this? You didn't see all this foolishness coming. But putting myself in their shoes, maybe they thought it was a possibility, but ultimately nothing too terrible had happened up until this point, or absolutely it's super serious, but I'm gonna be all right. Maybe that confidence of youth kicked in. Because there's no way my adult self would go to a place where I know folks mean me harm. I'm just not doing it. Not for my mental, not for my baby's mental. I'm talking about my husband. My husband's mental, nobody's. No, we're not doing that to disrupt our peace. No, ma'am, that's not happening. That's not happening. It just reminds me of how pitiful that whole situation was, and then to know it was two pitiful situations that happened within 6 months of each other. Two pitiful situations. Anyway, so like I said, the doc leaves a lot to be desired, but it does shed some light on some really interesting things. If you have not watched the movie Biggie, is it Biggie or Big? It's Biggie, the movie that the one where Notori Naughton plays Lil Kim, who did a wonderful job playing Lil Kim, by the way. And I forgot the young man who played at the time, played Tupac, but he did a good job as well. Not Tupac, but Biggie. Whatever. The guy that played Tupac, I can't remember who played Tupac. Was that Mackie guy? Whoever played Tupac in that Biggie movie did a good job and should have played Tupac in the Tupac film, All Eyes on Me, but he did not. And I don't think I loved All Eyes on Me, but if you haven't seen either of those, now would be a good time to watch those. The time of this recording, Biggie passed away on March 9th. So a couple of days ago was the anniversary of his passing. And the stepping back just a little bit, the documentary begins and ends with the same large, massive funeral procession in Brooklyn. And I remember seeing clips of that on MTV. Again, Kurt Loder, who, by the way, delivered all of the news. I remember him delivering the notification that of R. Kelly's first trial that I remember, Left Eye passing, Aaliyah passing, Tupac passing, Biggie passing. I remember him delivering that news, and all of that happened within a decade, in the same daggone decade. A lot happened, in fact. A whole lot happened in like 5-6 year span. And Kurt Loder was like the reporter for MTV that delivered it all. And there's the whole generation of older millennials who remember Kurt Loder and watch that. Because again, this was before Twitter. Remember, this was before Twitter. We didn't have Twitter. We were online, but we had chat rooms. We had chat rooms, and we were writing nasty things to people who may or may not have been who we thought they were. And we were perpetrating like we were somebody we weren't in many cases. But we didn't have Twitter. So we got our news, for the most part, we got our news from MTV. Yeah, we watch regular TV news, but we got our news from like MTV BET. And I didn't have BET because they was hating. that wasn't a part of the package. So I didn't have BET until I moved to college. So I got my news from MTV. And so, yeah, so it was just, I remember Ananda Lewis. I remember Kurt Loder didn't deliver that. Ananda Lewis delivered the Aaliyah news. I remember that. And Sway, wasn't Sway on MTV News too? So it was Kurt Loder, Ananda Lewis, and Sway when he was a VJ on MTV. It was them. And yeah, there was a time where that was my news. There was a time where so much was happening. It was like, what is going on? What is going on here? And I'm sure for young folks, it feels the same, exact same way. Like, a lot is happening with artists that they have come to know passing away. And for a lot of them, this is the first. I think the reason why Tupac stuck with us so much was because we related to him. We listened to him more. And even though, like, people had passed in my life, that was like the first passage of somebody that, like, I really thought I knew. Like, I knew I didn't personally know him, but like somebody that I was connected to that passed away, and we were dealing with grief, like in a real way for the very first time. And it was hard to kind of figure out what to do with that. And so we were still mourning the passage of Tupac when Biggie passed away. And again, it felt like a circle. And I did not think then that we would get justice. It never occurred to me that we would find out who took their lives. Never occurred to me. Never, never, never. Because in my mind, I was like, nobody's going to tell who did it. That's not something that's going to happen. And turns out it didn't. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, like I said, the documentary did all right. I love origin stories. This just wasn't the best origin story because it just didn't, I'm quite sure a lot of people who, a lot of the family had, family or friends had a lot to do with the questions that were asked and the information that was shared. So you're just not going to get a lot of incriminating things because it might ultimately incriminate people who are still able to be prosecuted for certain things. So, you know, you don't get the whole truth, but you get more than you knew. And so it's worth watching, but it's also worth going back to those movies, All Eyes on Me, but specifically in this case, the Biggie, and just watching it and kind of adding to your knowledge. But yeah. Well, that is the show. Honestly, I don't have more to share. That is the show. I hope you are enjoying these spring days. If we do have one more snow, I hope we get it done and over with. If you are if you have an opportunity to get the vaccine, I pray that you make that decision to do that. And if not, I pray that you are still safe because the world is opening up, my dear. Other countries have already opened up, but the United States is beginning to open up. Maryland is on some other stuff right now. Even though not everyone has gotten the vaccine, we know that certain rural communities, like most of those folks in those rural communities, have the vaccine, but I'm still over here. Now, how is that possible when I'm not even in a priority category and I can't sign up right now? I'm not in one of the top tier priority categories. Maybe they're going to open it up. I don't know. But I've got some questions I need to ask my fertility doctor first. But yeah, man, like, I want to be in the number because I want to get out here. I want to get out here for real. Still wearing my mask, still going out, you know, being safe. But like, I want to get out here. Anyway. All right, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. I really do appreciate you. Be safe out there. Stay well. Be kind to yourself. Be gentle to yourself. Share this episode with somebody that you think might enjoy it. Send me a message. I listen. Leave me a message on any of the, you know, the purple app, the Apple app. Favorable ones, I'll read them. Rate me 4 or 5 stars. I appreciate it. And then just keep listening and share any episodes that you think would be relevant to your friends and family. I know you guys are listening to the Twisted Melodies episode, which I did appreciate. I did enjoy making. There are actually a lot of episodes that y'all are listening to, so keep it up. Do your thing. Keep sharing. I appreciate you. Have a great, great day. Until next time.